Welcome to EB5 Investment Voice, where attorney insights intersects with immigration investments. If you are a foreign investor, domestic fund manager, or enterprising entrepreneur and want to get the most out of the EB5 program, you have come to the right place. I'm Mark Deal, and I'll be your co-host on this journey. I'm joined by your host, Mona Shaw, and other attorneys at Mona Shaw & Associates, as well as immigration leaders from around the world. So let's get into EB5 Investment Voice.
Mona, I'm looking at the title. Everyone else is looking at the title. Obviously, it's shown up on their podcast player. What? Not enough lawyers? Question mark. What do you mean by that? Don't we have plenty of lawyers? Aren't there many, many lawyers out there?
I know you're going to give me a too many lawyers joke right now. I can see that coming. But it's actually been in the news quite a lot recently, Mark, that recent studies, one of the main people doing that, I believe, was the University of Syracuse, has shown there to be a shortage of immigration lawyers in the U.S. We did some sort of research here. And you know what? Studies have also shown this to be the case, not just in the U.S., but overseas. And areas where there's what's called citizenship by investment and residency by investment market is dominated by consultants, not lawyers. So really, in this podcast, we are going to look at this phenomena of not enough lawyers and just how it affects the ultimate consumer, who is the investor. So I thought the best person to discuss this with us today is Sam Byard.
Hello, everyone.
Yeah, Sam Byard, welcome to the show. Now, as a short little intro, Sam established a boutique law practice that is now the Byard Group over three decades ago. Located in Dubai, United Arab Emirates, his primary areas of expertise are corporate migration, economic citizenship, investments, and tax planning.
As you can see, Sam really does have a good resume, not just in Canada, but you know, globally. What I'd like to point out is just give you some data here, because I think that the data really does speak volumes. According to the American Bar Association, there's something like 1,327,910 registered lawyers in the United States. So yes, there's a lot of lawyers, with the highest perhaps being in somewhere like New York, where we have almost 19,000. And then you have a state like New Hampshire, where there's just barely 3,500. But that's still a lot of lawyers. But the issue is, out of this 1,327,910 lawyers, only 16,000 are registered with AILA, which is the American Immigration Lawyers Association. Of that 16,000, believe it or not, under 100 actually practice in EB5 investments. So that just gives you a little bit of an idea. We're not just talking about a shortage of lawyers at courts and asylum, but really throughout. Sam, how is it in Canada?
Well, prior to this podcast, I did a bit of a research and I realized that the proportions of lawyers in Canada and US are nearly the same compared to the population. I mean, you guys have what, about 300 a million people in the U.S., and the ratio with your lawyers would be something like 0.0039. And in Canada, we have roughly about 150,000. And if you divide it by 40 million, you have something like 0.0037. So not far from each other. If you round it to decimal, it would be 0.03, 0.003, and 0.003. So it's nearly the same. We're only 40 million here. But I think it's really difficult to pinpoint how many of these lawyers are specialized in immigration, because in the US, I believe, but in Canada for sure, we don't have a proper designation. I mean, in the medical field, if you're a heart surgeon, you are a heart specialist and you have that designation, or an ophthalmologist. But in Canada, at least, we don't have any special designation saying, for example, in my province, Quebec, being specialized. There is an association for immigration lawyers in Quebec. There's an association for immigration lawyers in Canada. But the fact that you are a member or not would not preclude you from practicing or not. So maybe there are more, maybe there are less, which, of course, I think is the cause why we have so many immigration consultants.
Yeah. I think people really don't understand where the statistics are. As I said, a lot of these studies really are talking about court, but not business and investment. So let's step away from America and Canada just for a minute. And let's talk about CBI, Citizenship by Investment. We see a lot of consultants in this area, but the area itself is as difficult as it is in the US and Canada. We're talking about investments. We're talking about working with high net worth individuals.
Yeah, but you see the problem why there are so many consultants and why these documents are not properly assessed. Generally speaking, worldwide, the whole concept of immigration, especially business immigration, has been commoditized, and it's people are not properly looking at the process. Because it's commoditized, that has opened the door for people that are not qualified. I mean, there are consultants that are very qualified, but there are some who are less. And that's why it's become like buying the good, you know, so a product. So
no buying passports.
Exactly. So, I mean, in the CBI industry, I mean, everyone's talking about the attributes of the passport. Oh, you can go to Schengen for free or without a visa, or to UK, or you can go to China or Russia. And this is actually upsetting the host countries because, I mean, if I was the Schengen zone, I would be upset because people are selling something saying, hey, buy this and you can go there without a visa. And it's not properly marketed. And the reason for that is being commoditized. And the same thing with US. I mean, no one will go and pay proper attention to EB-5 documents, which are very sophisticated documents they have to sign with extraordinary issues you need to look into. But everyone says, okay, sign this document here. No one will explain it to you. And then people don't really understand. For example, when I try to talk about the US market, this particularly the EB-5, I always tell clients, wait a minute, there's a couple of things you need to understand. The investment is not to be guaranteed. There is going to be a conditional green card. So people really think twice. But the market, the way they sell it is just give this much, you're going to get the visa.
Well, Sam, I really want to hasten to add, because we have a lot of domestic listeners who are going to jump up and down, and lawyers are going to say, hey, that's not true. We do explain documents. Yes, we do in the US, but Sam is referring to how a lot of EB-5 is sold overseas. And he's absolutely right. I've heard this many a time, and we've discussed this many a time, Sam, haven't we, that the consultants just don't understand the documents, so they ignore the documents. It's as simple as that.
Exactly. I mean, my practice is nearly exclusively outside of America, Canada, particularly in the Middle East and MENA region. And all the immigrants that are moving from that region, either into the migration programs of the Anglo-Saxon countries, Europe, into the CBI, Citizenship by Investment, or Residency by Investment, they're not fully given a true picture of their rights, responsibility, and the process they're starting. The whole thing is being illustrated by the amount of time it takes, a couple of documents they need, and a total cost price, which is not really good. It's not the way it should be. And because it's practiced outside of our jurisdiction, therefore, anything goes.
Your practice is mostly from the UAE, and in from that, Sam, Dubai. So yeah. In Dubai, are there any registration requirements for lawyers or consultants who are selling, you know, citizenship or residency to outside countries, or is it considered not to be in the jurisdiction of the UAE?
No, there is any type of practice in the UAE needs to be regulated by a special type of license. In my case, I have a law firm license, but there is a license for immigration consultants. It's fairly easy to get it. Recently, they've closed that license because there's been too much abuse. But yes, there is a licensing, but it's quite relaxed in terms of applying and getting it and practicing under. But it's not really enforced neither. You know, the rules of different countries. People just walk into to the Middle East, particularly Dubai, but this being a hub, and they just put an advertisement and saying they're selling XYZ product. It's being sold as a product, as a commodity, and the focus is on cost, processing time, and documents.
Hmm. When you say there's been an abuse by consultants, what do you mean?
Well, the abuse, I cannot say consultants, by people that have the consultancy license, okay?
Yeah.
And the abuse is that they use this type of license to promote themselves as a specialist where they're not. And they allow themselves to give all sort of advice, which they're not competent to do that. And that's what's creating all these mishaps, you know. I think the market is not regulated. And I think part of it also is because of the countries.
Yeah.
You know, like how many times I've mentioned to, for example, the Caribbean countries that XYZ are selling passports. They put the photo of the passport on their advertisement and they put a photo of themselves next to someone important. So that creates a false imagery, you know, that they have contacts, they know people. And that creates a false narrative.
Yeah.
Which is not true.
I mean, the very first thing is when if somebody would say, well, if a consultant can do this, why do we need a lawyer? Aren't lawyers more expensive? But I really don't think that's the case. I think consultants are quite expensive as well.
It's funny. In different regions, consultants are playing games, which is interesting. Well, for example, a power of attorney in Arabic, Urdu, and Farsi is called wakala. And then wakala means power of attorney, but a lawyer is called vakil. So the person that holds your power of attorney becomes your vakil, which is the same word as a lawyer. So these guys play with these words. For example, in Iran, they say, well, you see, I am your vakil, I am your lawyer. And that's how they promote themselves. Like some consultants which have higher degrees, like a bachelor's or master's or PhD, not in law, in, I don't know, philosophy, they'll portray themselves with their graduation touch and, you know, all those attires to give a reflection that, oh my God, they look like a lawyer, you know. So it's a little mishap. But then again, I come back, it's the government's fault because they should be asking for more comprehensive files and applications too, you know. It's a mismatch too. It's not just the consultants filling up a void. The government has also created a void that is filled by people that don't need to be properly qualified.
Well, I do agree with that too. I won't say so much for EB-5 because I do think EB-5 is so complicated that, you know, an explanation is required. But here's the thing. Even in the US, there are a lot of lawyers, immigration lawyers, who will work with an investor for their source of funds, but will not spend any time discussing the complicated business structures or the details with the documents. That's left to a regional center. And a regional center or a project are not lawyers necessarily. In a way, I would say you could, in a converse kind of fashion, you could say that lawyers are selling EB-5 even in the U.S.
Well, I think the U.S., you guys have, lawyers have still a very particular and privileged position because immigration is primarily being, immigration department will primarily only discuss a case with lawyers. But in Canada, it's really strange because the government is actually pushing consultants to come in. And we have here almost, I think, about 12,000 immigration consultants.
That's
that the government is trying to, yeah, no, they're, well, for our country is this. And they actually want them to take a more active role. I mean, I do agree with them. There's a lot of tasks that doesn't require a lawyer, like filling up some forms and simple stuff. And yes, why not? I mean, they should do that. It's the same thing as in medicine. Doctors would not administrate all the medical procedures. There are nurses, there are nurses' aides. So yes, why not? But I think here we're going way beyond that. You know, the governments, they want to give them far more roles, far more importance. And of course, they're charging the same price, you know, they're charging the same price. And that's why I'm saying if you have to pay for a certain service at the same price, well, why don't you go hire someone who is more competent? And of course, someone who's insured because.
Yeah, lawyers, I was going to say that.
Yeah, but I mean, we have our indemnity insurance and we have the bar who is very closely monitoring our activities. I have dozens and dozens of examples of consultants who are misconducting themselves out of their jurisdiction, out of Canada, for example, in my case here, and they're unpunished.
Well, you know, that's such an important part, the whether or not you have insurance. And of course, a lawyer has to carry insurance. But how would a potential client even determine whether they're talking to a consultant or a lawyer? if a consultant doesn't actually state anything.
Well, that's what I'm saying. There is a lot of it's a lot of game happening. You know, they portray themselves as well-established, lawyerly, you know, all these things. And of course, they try to avoid the subject, and they simplify the whole process. They don't fully describe to the client the pitfalls that could happen. You know, for example, in your EB-5, when someone comes to me and discusses the case, I say, well, the first thing you have to accept is not the fact that you're going to get your money or not. That's important. But more importantly is that, will you be able to renew your green card? Because you have a conditional green card.
Yeah.
You don't want to move your family out after 2 years, because losing money, well, you can always replace it. But taking your family out of the U.S. because your green card was not renewed, oof, that's harder. Go explain to your wife, go explain to your children, and be going back to home country. That is difficult.
Yeah, there's a feeling behind that.
You've hit a nerve there. And we do plan to go into this in more detail, Sam, but we're not talking about 2 years. Right now, USCIS is 4 years backlogged in adjudicating 829s.
I know, but Mona, the green card is 2 years.
No, but, it gets automatically extended. So after 2 years, it gets automatically extended during the period that USCIS is adjudicating. But potentially, you could be here 4 or 5 years and you've made a life for yourself. I mean, 4 or 5 years of your children going to school, it's just not easy to just uproot everybody.
Yeah, that's true. You
know, if things go wrong.
Well, but we're talking about emotions. But I think what people don't fully realize is that, you know, immigration is a matter of hearts. You touch people's emotionally. You know, they want to move. They stop living in their country. They stop investing, all these things, because they know they're going to move.
Yeah.
So I think the worst thing that is happening in our industry is that we give people false hopes and then saying that, oh, yeah, you're going to get your visa in 2 years. You move. So they stop investing. They stop doing everything that's needed in a daily life, thinking they're moving. But then it doesn't happen. Wow, that's tragic.
It is. And there's an interesting point that you've made once to me, Sam, and this is something that a lawyer will come up with as opposed to a consultant, is that because you have knowledge of the law and you have knowledge of countries and you have knowledge of alternatives to perhaps investments, maybe there is another avenue for that particular client, that often when a client comes to you, and it maybe it's a husband and wife, and maybe they've decided to split, and the wife will come to, let's say they're coming to the US and they're coming for the child's education, and the wife and the child come while the husband stays overseas, all the problems that that causes, that you can find alternatives.
Oh, for sure. I mean, when I started my practice about 30 years ago, it was quite simple. There was not that much residency by investment. There was not that many CBI, citizenship by investment programs. Migration was primarily skilled workers and investor, same in the US. But today there's so many different type of programs. There's a nomad visas. There's a whole variety. And there's so many countries now. Every country is trying to attract newcomers.
Every country.
Particularly the Western countries. So I think the main issue here is that in our industry, the whole migration industry, I think the whole process is not looked at holistically. You know, unfortunately, one group more than another, consultants more than lawyers, are primarily focused on a program that to try to promote one program. My company, my staff, we try to basically create a big picture of all the potential or the possibility an individual has.
Yeah.
Try to match that with their aspiration and desires. And then we come up with some solutions. And then we try to look at those solutions to see which ones would be more realistic within the time frame. For example, a couple that have young children, you know, in the kindergarten, well, they're not in a really in a hurry to go. But the family that their kids are going to turn adults, get out of the minimum required age, you know, like in the US, they're going to turn 22. Or the kids are going to turn above that age, they need to a program that's going to come to term faster, you know, sooner. So the whole family could stay united. There's also other aspects too. For example, with the CBIs, you can include, for example, in the Caribbean program, you can include your parents. You can include your younger siblings.
And your mother-in-law.
Your older children. And your mother-in-law. That's a harder one to invest and to pay for that. But nevertheless, it makes your wife happy. And if your wife's happy, hey, Your life is picturesque. It's important. We need to take care of our wives too. Those who have. I don't have one. Not anymore. But seriously, you need to dress up a complete picture.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. But outside of those relationships, and I've often had this argument, CBI, citizenship by investment, those kind of countries, for example, and we're talking countries like Turkey or the Caribbean or Cyprus, whilst it had citizenship, often a businessman might turn to some of these countries because they want to enhance their international trade or use the citizenship as a strategic instrument for diversifying their investment portfolios or broadening their markets and opportunities, even reducing tax liability. Again, all of these areas that you really need some depth of understanding, some kind of knowledge, some kind of background, and you just don't want to be giving the wrong advice.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think what's missing in the industry is individuals, let's say advisors, if they're a lawyer or consultant. I think advisors need to be far more trained. We're not regulated, therefore anything goes. They need to be more trained in knowing exactly what's happening worldwide and understanding the programs. And on the other hand, listening to the clients or the applicants' needs. And the main issue is that their opinion should be unbiased. So they should advise the client based on their client's needs and their aspirations. Unfortunately, in our industry, with commissions built and that, sometimes some companies will try to promote the program more because they got benefits.
That's a question I really wanted to bring up about the commission. So in the US, we have a private placement memorandums, and especially under the new laws, which came out in March of 2022, everything has to be transparent. So an investor coming in will know exactly how much is paid and where it's being paid. Is that the same for the CBI countries?
Unfortunately, no. No, and there's a phenomenon happening in the CBI countries, but particularly the Caribbean, that's called the discounting, you know. So what is paid is not really what is in the law, and everything goes. But coming back to the previous point, making sure clients' needs are met properly or they're properly guided to the right program is important. You mentioned, for example, fiscal planning.
Yes.
Also, one needs to look into their future problems they might have. For example, Malta, in their citizenship by investment law, and also St. Lucia, I believe, they have a condition that if within the first seven years of citizenship, if they committed a crime that has a prison term of more than a year, they lose their citizenship. Accidents happen, but certain people know their livelihood. It's likely on the dangerous side. And if they have invested in such a citizenship to build their business, well, they might be in trouble. So there's all these things you need to consider when advising someone. But of course, if someone is for simply wants a citizenship by investment for access, for example, now certain countries have access to China and Russia without a visa. For example, Dominica, Commonwealth of Dominica or Dominique, once you acquire their citizenship, you don't need a visa to travel to Russia and China. And those countries are difficult to travel to, applying for visas, everything, but now you don't need a visa.
Would the ultimate goal of the investors also affect that decision?
So it depends also what you want to do. If you are, for example, want to travel a lot to China and you have a, let's say, a Western passport like US or Canada, well, imagine now, you're okay, you can go whenever you want. Or now that we have this conflict in Ukraine, imagine going to Russia because of business or something with a Western passport might be not easy. But if you have another citizenship, that would be easy. Look what happened during the COVID pandemic.
Yeah,
there was restrictions, but for example, Europe restricted access to non-residents and citizens. So if you had a property in Greece or Portugal, for example, or Spain, well, you were a resident of Schengen zone, so you can travel because you're going back home. But I, as a Canadian who doesn't have a Schengen residency, well, I couldn't travel. So that's important. I mean, some countries took more dramatic approach, like Australia, forbidding even citizens to returning.
Sam, I know we've been talking about not enough lawyers, but are there specific things that a lawyer can do that a consultant cannot? And what do you have as a word of wisdom for the investors who are out there and really don't have access to good lawyers in the area?
Well, as lawyers, we still have a role. We're the only one that can go to courts. I mean, in Canada, only lawyers, a member of a good standing of a bar that can represent the clients. So that's at least something, as we say in French, chasse gardée, something which is reserved for us. Now, as far as clients, I don't think a client is not able to find a competent lawyer with the internet, with LinkedIn, with all these Google search. You can find a lawyer that is competent. And with technology now and with iCloud and everything, and all the CRM programs, it's impossible for someone at the remote location not be able to work with a US, Canadian, British lawyer. That's an impossibility. So a client that wants to be safe, they'll find us. And those who want to live on the edge, yeah, well, there's plenty of consultants on the corner of the street where they live, where they work.
I have a quick question for you, Sam. We had a podcast last week, Rebecca and myself, relating to how these massive government fee hikes that we're seeing coming into the US, whether that's going to actually affect the EB-5 industry. I'd be very interested to see your opinion of that, being somebody who works with investors overseas.
Well, listen, if I compare Canada with you guys in the US, our Quebec investors were paying $15,000 to open an application just for first part of that. And it's just been hiked to 17,000 something Canadian dollar, which is about 13,000 US. Now your EB-5 is being increased to 3,000-4,000. That's nothing. I think the class of applicants that are going to apply into these programs, either CBI, RBI, or Migration Investment Program, they have a lot of money. They can pay, and I don't think it's going to dissuade them not to apply. It's no way. Look, Greece, I increased from 400 to, I think, 800. Malta was 1.1 million euro. You know, I don't think that's an issue. I don't think this is a deterrent. No, not at all. But, you know, and they have the money. There's so many millionaires now in the world, and especially after COVID, with all the money that was injected in the economies, a lot of people grab that. So they have money.
Well, let's hope then these people come to lawyers and they don't go to consultants.
But I think lawyers, we are shying away also from not advertising or promoting ourselves. I mean, I congratulate you on this track record of your podcast you've had.
Thank you.
Most lawyers don't do that. There's a handful of lawyers in Canada. There's a handful in US that do actually try to clarify this, demystify the whole process, simplify it to some extent. And I put you on the top of the list.
Sam, anyone else might have made this topic boring, but I really thank you for your really good insights. And I really hope you enjoyed doing this because we would love to have you back.
Well, I love this platform. I love to discuss things with you. The format is fantastic. Just too short. 30 minutes? My God, it goes so fast.
We're working against that commute, Sam. Thank you for being on Global Investment Voice.
Thank you for being with us today on EB-5 Investment Voice. The topics presented in this podcast is informational in nature and is not to be taken as specific legal advice. If you have questions on the topics presented in this episode or other investment immigration needs, please contact Mona Shaw & Associates. Mona and her attorney staff can be reached at mshawlaw.com. That's mshahlaw.com. Make sure you don't miss our next episode focusing on a different aspect of the EB-5 program by subscribing to the podcast. While you're at it, leave us a rating on iTunes. If you really found this episode valuable, share it with someone else that could benefit from this information. Until then, I'll see you on the next episode of EB-5 Investment Voice.